Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
The world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to what we like to call a Shenanigans Wednesday. You in the mood for some shenanigans, Vinny?
Always.
Same.
It's not limited to Wednesday.
Same.
We just crank it up a little
bit.
Yeah,
I know. I agree with that. Before we get started today, last night was interesting from the standpoint that a new 30 for 30 dropped, and it was on the 86 Mets. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to give any spoiler alerts, but there's a lot of George Forster!
At least in episode one there was.
What a team that was.
Although he wasn't really part of the 86 Mets.
Yeah, no, that's true.
They had the. I watched episode one. I haven't seen episode two. That's reserved for like 10:05 this morning when I get home.
Right.
But it was a lot of lead up, and it's really, really well done so far.
Yeah, no, it really is. And that
Lenny Dykstra has a potty mouth.
Well, that whole team.
We all knew that.
That whole team was out of its mind.
Uh-huh.
Nah. Nah.
Out of its mind and really, really good at baseball.
Yeah, they were. Now, as a New Yorker, where does that team rate? Do you know what I mean? Is that team, like, revered?
What are you asking me for? Like, who died and left me, boss? Like, I got no input on that.
Rain pool?
No, I was born there. I'm not a New Yorker.
No, I know that. There. I know that.
I will say this. I grew up, I was born into a Yankee family. My dad was a diehard Yankee fan. In 1986, I'm a sophomore in high school. I had a sister who went back during the 86 season when Mets fever was kind of gripping New York. The Yankees were decent, but they weren't obviously on the same level. She brought me back a Mets t-shirt. So I actually did wear a Mets t-shirt during that season.
Yeah.
I feel dirty admitting it. But it was a likable team.
It was a drug-fueled party team. They fought all the time, right?
And it had tremendous star power, too.
That's what it
Strawberry
was.
Strawberry and
yeah.
Dwight Gooden.
Dwight Gooden.
Hernandez.
That's right. Ray Knight.
Ron Darling. Sid Fernandez.
Calvin Schiraldi.
Tim Tuffle. Molly Backman.
Now, for people in the morning who have never listened to us before, that is called Dueling Gambos. Mm-hmm. And what we like to do is, like, we like to make fun of John Gambatoro.
Or Joe Gambadoro.
Joe Gambadoro.
Because somebody has to.
Gambo.
Right? Somebody
That's why
has
I'm not
to.
On afternoons anymore. Right. Just kidding. This was my choice.
Gambatoro.
Gambo loves going down memory lane. And when he talks about old teams, I found this early on.
Yeah. He starts naming players from the roster.
Like, you remember that team? And it was just starting.
The Big Red Machine. You remember that? Joe Morgan. Pete Rose. Tony Perez.
Joe Gambadoro.
Cesar Geronimo.
Dave Concepcion.
So we just, we kind of stole that.
Yeah, we did. Okay.
And now we,
yeah.
It's not really making fun. It's more of a tribute.
I guess so.
An homage.
It's an homage, right? We do it love.
Remember this. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery
when
you're not the one being imitated.
Right. That is true.
There's
a lot to that. There's a lot to be said to that. Uh-huh. All right. So Shenanigans Wednesday. I think we're off to a good start. Start the show, Jarrett.
I did warn you that I can beat you up, right?
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yeah, we start the Splash for Wednesday, September 15th, with the a note from the Captain Obvious file. Mm-hmm. Chandler Jones of the Arizona Cardinals named the NFC Week 1 Defensive Player of the Week after his 5-sack performance against the Tennessee Titans. I want to talk about running away with an award. Chandler Jones did it.
Will there ever be a more obvious choice for Defensive Player of the Week?
I don't even know if there was another candidate, honestly.
Oh, right?
Sure, guys had good games, right. but nobody wreaked the havoc that Chandler Jones did.
No, that is true.
It's the fourth time he's won the weekly award since becoming a member of the Cardinals, and according to the Cardinals press release, that ties a team record with Adrian Wilson, who also won it four times during his career.
Wow.
Maybe the more interesting part is Kyler Murray, who was a strong candidate for the Offensive Player of the Week in the NFC, did not win that award. It was a quarterback within the division, Matthew Stafford of the Rams, who threw four touchdown passes in his first game as a Ram. Yeah, I guess that went pretty well. You know, after everything that was talked about with Matthew Stafford coming to L.A., he kind of proved all those people right, at least through one game.
Yeah, I'm not I didn't watch the whole Rams game. I saw the highlights. I saw the scoring plays. Mm-hmm. I read about his performance. I'm not sure it's better than what Kyler Murray put on the football field over the weekend, but I do think that there is a lot of wind behind this guy in terms of him being put on a pedestal, sort of to give him his just dues after laboring in Detroit all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it, because on all the MVP lists going into the season, he was always at the top, almost as if people are expecting this to happen. And so I think week one's kind of a preview of the inside track he has for the MVP award.
Patrick Mahomes won the award in the AFC for offense, and it was Max Crosby of the Las Vegas Raiders winning the defensive award. Cardinals back on the practice field today, getting ready for their home opener this Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings in a return home, quote-unquote, for Patrick Peterson.
P2, Pat P, yeah, it's going to be quite a scene out there, Vinny. I would like to think it'd be a friendly reunion. I don't think that's the way it's going to play out. And I think, like most things, I think Patrick Peterson has got a hand in that.
I would agree. I am curious to see what the reaction is. 49ers running back Raheem Mostert, who was injured in Sunday's win over the Detroit Lions, has opted to have season-ending surgery on his knee. It was originally reported that Mostert could return in about 8 weeks, but he's having the surgery instead. With Mostert done for the season, the 49ers sign running back Kerryon Johnson, the former Lion, to their practice squad. And they've already got a group of Elijah Mitchell, Trey Sermon, and second-year pro Jamichael Hasty. I just think it's plug and play.
I think Raheem Mostert's a very explosive, physical kind of back, so I do think this is a loss. But once again, the 49ers are coming off a year when they were decimated by injuries, and they're off to the same kind of start
Mostert
this year.
Mostert out for the year, Jason Verrett out for the year already. Eight members of the New Orleans Saints, including six coaches, have tested positive for COVID-19 ahead of Sunday's game against Carolina. So they go into the protocol, and a return for the coaches could be in the future if they can produce two negative tests within a 24-hour period. The Los Angeles Dodgers got home runs from Max Muncy, Trey Turner, and Will Smith on their way to an 8-4 victory over the D-backs, a win that clinched a ninth straight postseason appearance for the Dodgers. Muncy's two-run shot in the third off Luke Weaver stretched the Dodgers' lead to 3-0. Turner went deep in the fifth on a solo shot to make it 5-0. One of the highlights for Arizona was Ketel Marte's three-run shot off reliever Justin Brule in the seventh that got to Arizona to within two at 6-4, but Dodgers tacked on two more runs in the seventh for the winning margin. Here's a stat on Ketel Marte. 12 home runs this year.
Mm-hmm.
In games that he's homered, the Diamondbacks are 3-9. You would be hard-pressed to find a split where the Diamondbacks have a winning record.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That doesn't surprise me at all. I think every split, they're going to be looking like that.
Yep. Tony Gonsolin was strong for the Dodgers. He threw five scoreless innings, allowed just two hits. 2-13 now the mark against L.A. this year. They've got one more at Dodger Stadium tonight. Merrill Kelly expected to make his return to the mound, at least from what I gathered, against lefty Julio Urias. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:30 here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Ryan Braun, the man who cheated to help the Milwaukee Brewers oust the D-backs out of the 2011 National League playoffs, announced his retirement via social media yesterday. Braun was the National League Rookie of the Year in 2007, and in that same year, where he had some funny stuff in his system, 2011, he won the MVP. He is also the Milwaukee Brewers' all-time leading home run hitter. 352.
He also, for a brief minute, rose on the list of Valley's most hated.
Yes.
You know what? And he was there for a while.
He also completely fell off a cliff once they caught him cheating.
There
imagine
was that.
Imagine that.
His career really
imagine
was
that.
Never the same.
Wow.
Yeah, he started out like a house on fire.
Oh, yeah.
His first 5 years in the league, you're like, uh-oh. And then, yeah, cooled off after that. And Denver Nuggets forward Aaron Gordon has agreed to a four-year, $92 million contract extension with the Nuggets. That reported yesterday. Gordon, of course, the Arizona Wildcat product, was traded from Orlando to Denver at the deadline. And we got an up-close and personal look at Aaron Gordon in that four-game sweep of the, by the Suns of the Nuggets.
Yeah.
I thought he looked like a total non-factor. So good for him for getting $92 million.
Yeah, but he was a factor for the team during the course of the regular season. And that team did do fairly well, even though they lost Jamal Murray. And so,
well, they would have won. They would have won the whole thing if Jamal Murray was healthy.
Do I detest sarcasm?
I'm just playing along with the theme of Suns fans that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I got a great tweet yesterday. Did you see the video of Buda Baker knocking Taylor Lewan on his keister on a corner blitz?
Yes.
And I retweeted it and I said it was a rough day for Taylor Lewan. And some a Suns fan tweeted me and said the Titans would have won if Jamal Murray was healthy.
Yeah,
Jamal
okay.
Crawford?
Yes.
Hey,
where did that come from? Just playing along.
From the archives, yeah. Jamal. Why not?
This is the only Jamal cut you had?
It's only Jamal.
Do you have anything from Malcolm Jamal Warner back there, Jared? There you go. There's your splash for Wednesday, September 15th. Coming up, Chandler Jones starting out the season with an exclamation point. He's got an award to show for it. We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
And Murata, mornings on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
This is the most impressive we've seen all three phases play in the Cliff Kingsbury era.
This feels a lot different. He had a blocked punt last year. This feels a lot different than that San Fran game. Tannehill on fourth down, hit and sacked. It's Chandler Jones. Five sacks on the day for 55. Chandler Jones making some money.
Maybe you had the same reaction I did. That was a Chandler Jones just putting on a show Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. Dave Pasch, Ron Wolfley on the call on the Cardinals Radio Network. Every time I saw, you know, when you're in the course of watching the game, you know, I tend to watch the quarterback when he's got the ball. So you don't always recognize or identify who the guy who brought him down was immediately, Bick.
Mm-hmm.
So every time Chandler Jones got up off the quarterback, it's just this feeling of like, oh, my God, we're watching absolute domination right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like a defensive line version, at least Sunday's game, of what Lawrence Taylor used to look like. When nobody could block him, and he just has a way of detonating a quarterback and separating him from the football. I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't. A lot of guys are good at strip sacks. Chandler Jones just makes quarterbacks drop the football out of fear, out of surprise, out of whatever. And that was just a remarkable game. And what's weird about it, too, is people in Tennessee have kind of reviewed this game, and poor Taylor Lewan, who's a local kid, right?
Chaparral?
Yeah, he got his backside handed to him, and people in Nashville have reviewed that game and said the Titans never adjusted, never did anything to get him any help.
No, they didn't, and I looked at the Pro Football Focus grades just for, you know, giggles yesterday. Taylor Lewan was not the worst-ranked tackle in Week 1. Alex Leatherwood from the Raiders.
Yeah.
Who was the guy who had the false start?
Yeah, he had a rough night too.
He's had a rough go of it since they called his name on draft night and everybody went, "Why the hell did they draft a third rounder in the first round?"
That's right. I forgot about that until you just brought that up.
They were both sub 40s. So it was a rough day for Taylor Lewan, and I mentioned it earlier, the video that went, you know, it didn't lead to a sack, but Buda Baker coming off the corner and just absolutely depositing Taylor Lewan, who's a very, very good offensive tackle, coming off an injury, yes, but just put him right on his backside. It was a rough day.
Yeah, it really was. And so the Cardinals had a couple of these guys last year. Hassan Reddick in his five-sack game against the Giants that came out of absolute nowhere. And like I said yesterday, that felt more like a good dude just catching lightning in a bottle. That kind of day was generally beyond Hassan Reddick's reach.
Although he did have a good debut for the Panthers. He had a sack and a half against the Jets. Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe that unlocked something. But I kind of, in real time, I felt the same way. It's like, wow, that's not going to be sustainable.
Right.
Now Chandler Jones is not going to get five sacks every week,
but he might. He's capable of it.
But one of the problems now is the Minnesota Vikings are watching that film and they're coming up with a plan to neutralize him. That's where the whole double-edged sword of having J.J. Watt on the other side comes into play.
That's right.
You want to give Chandler Jones all that attention, then maybe J.J. Watt gets loose, or maybe Marcus Golden gets loose. The Cardinals' pass rush, just from a personnel standpoint. And now with the way that Vance Joseph is in his groove and dialing up pressures, although he didn't have to be very creative, it was just go get the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And in week one, Chandler Jones got the quarterback. I mean, this pass rush could be something to deal with for the entire year.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, especially if this team really has turned a corner in terms of physicality. If what we saw Sunday from the defense is the new norm, this is going to be exciting. The other player, defensive player of the week for the Cardinals last year, Buda Baker, had that monstrous game in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So the Cardinals defense has made quite a statement right out of the gate with this award and that performance. Yep. And here's the other thing, too. We talked about Matthew Stafford getting offensive player of the week.
Over Kyler Murray.
Chandler Jones, generally speaking, unless I'm wrong about this, the league isn't going to give an offensive and a defensive player of the week to the same team if it's close. So Chandler Jones' performance was so good that I think it helped Matthew Stafford take that from Kyler Murray, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it yesterday that, you know, Chandler Jones was in a category unto himself when it came to defensive players in week one. There wasn't really another candidate. But, yeah, Kyler Murray was in the mix. Matthew Stafford had a really good game. Russell Wilson had a really good game just in the division. Deebo Samuel was ridiculous for San Francisco. So there was other viable candidates for week one offensive player of the week. A little surprise. I think, you know, the fact that Kyler Murray threw a bad interception. I mean, if you're considering all things and looking at, you know, the quality of a one-game resume, that had to be factored in because Matthew Stafford barely threw any incomplete passes, let alone no picks.
Right, and again, and I think that because the Cardinals had the obvious defensive player of the week in the NFC, I think that's why Matthew Stafford also got an edge. So this will be interesting to see exactly what kind of vibe Chandler Jones brings to the field this weekend, because he didn't speak to the media afterwards. I doubt he's going to speak to the media this week. And so I guess that would assume that he's going to remain in the mindset that he is. In our conversation with Dave Pasch yesterday, he does not believe an extension is forthcoming. And the more I thought about that, the more that's probably exactly the way the Cardinals are going to go with this, because it sounds to me like the Cardinals really have misconceptions on whether and how long and how much money to give him based on his age.
Yeah, it's tricky. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, it was tricky, too, when you're talking about the age in the offseason and the questions about the contract. What do you do? That was before a five-sack game. That was the best Chandler Jones has looked in a Cardinal uniform. And he's done a lot of good things in a Cardinal uniform. So, I you know, the age might be immaterial, at least for the first couple years of any potential deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's also a tricky thing, because if Chandler Jones has a historic record-breaking season and the Cardinals choose not to pay him based on fear of the future, that's a Pandora's box you're opening.
But it is a tough thing, like Pass said, because you're not paying him for what he did this season. You're paying him for what you think he's going to do over the next two or three seasons.
Yes.
That's right.
Hard to factor, but if he gets 85 sacks.
but what happens is, if he has that kind of crazy dominating season, and your instincts are, okay, you know, thanks, but we can't pay you, your players are going to think that's Bush in your own locker room, and your fans are going to think the same thing. So it can be real tricky. I understand their thought here.
But, I mean, they're potentially complicating it further by waiting. If Chandler Jones, this is an example of how motivated he is on any any given game day,
mm-hmm.
you might be costing yourself more money.
You might, unless you have resolved that if he ends up costing more, then that's going to make our decision for us, that we're not going to give him that because of, you know, declining stuff with the age that he's at. It's tricky because Chandler Jones has defied a lot of different stuff. Chandler Jones, when he got his first deal with the Cardinals, the Patriots let him go because they didn't want to pay him the last time.
Yeah.
So the Patriots made the decision past the line of diminishing returns, and they were way wrong.
Well, he was also at that was bold even for them at that age. But yeah. That was their philosophy, and that remains mm-hmm. their philosophy. And it's one of the few times it's kind of blown up in their face because Chandler Jones has been just ridiculous since he got to Arizona.
Yeah. No, he has.
Text Red Sea right now to 620-620 and listen for your name at 735, 135, and 335. You could win a pair of tickets to the Arizona Cardinals home opener this Sunday. Plus, one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. Once again, that's Red Sea to 620-620. Coming up next, we're days away from seeing the Cardinals play at home in front of a full stadium against the Vikings. We'll get into some of the latest plot lines next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Yeah, that's good for me, man. I think the one message we're really trying to start in this building right now is that it was just 1 week, just a starting point, kind of just like Cliff said. You know, last year we got off to a decent start. We were, I think, 2-0, and then we blew 1 week 3. So, again, we're just trying to take this 1 week at a time. One game at a time, figure out our next opponent, figure out how we can beat the Minnesota Vikings, and then keep moving forward.
It's Chase Edmonds of the Arizona Cardinals speaking with the media yesterday, and that's kind of the company line through week one. This is not a statement game. This is a starting point for the Arizona Cardinals, and I think it might be cosmetic. It might be nothing more than just words at this point, but that's the right attitude to have.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit back, even though the Cardinals had one of the more dominant league-wide performances in week one, Bick, you can't sit back and admire it. You should treat it as a starting point and kind of a reminder of what you're capable of when you have everything
yeah.
in line.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I think if the Arizona Cardinals go out, they've got a great opportunity here because they've gotten everybody's attention. To me, it was remarkable the amount of national run they received out of that game on Sunday, and that is because They took advantage of a great chance to make an early impact. We ID'd going into week one the teams that had the opportunities to kind of, boom, we are here and we are now. The Browns had a great opportunity. They lost their grip at the end of the game. Chiefs win that game. Browns get some respect, but they're still 0-1. Cardinals beat the Titans by 25 points on the road, and it wasn't just that. It was the way they beat them by effectively punching them in the face and really contradicting anybody who might think pretty boy football is still a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think only the Saints can boast a better win. And that Saints thing might be a little fluky in that the Packers waved the white flag very early, put Jordan Love into the game. I don't know. But you can't say beating the Packers and Aaron Rodgers by 35 points is less than what the Cardinals did.
Yeah, I mean, that Packers team in the last 2 years has been 26-6 and played for a spot in the Super Bowl in those 2 years. So that's a really good win by New Orleans.
Like you said, though, the way the Cardinals won, where the Tennessee was supposed to be everything that the Cardinals weren't, this tough, gritty team is going to run it down your throat, going to control the clock, the ball, and they completely nullified that.
Completely.
And the fact that they were able to impose their will on the Titans, which for how long have we said that, like, have an identity and play your way, don't adjust to them, impose your
role. No doubt. And so to me, and I wrote about this today on ArizonaSports.com, to me the great takeaway here is a couple things. This was one of Steve Keim's promises to the fan base going into this season, that he was going to come back with a more physical football team and a football team with better leadership, better internal character. After one game, the physical part thing certainly looks like they've accomplished that. Cardinals played with a lot of attitude. They were hunting. That's the word that what's-his-face, the commentator, used a lot during the game, and he was right about that.
Character.
Great character. So to me, if you've got a physical football team, that's something you should have every week. You might not have a great performance from Kyler Murray or Chandler, you might not get the individual things that we saw, but being a really physical football team should follow you every week. It's like having a great defense in the NBA. And it should really help this football team compete against some teams they've struggled with in the past, yeah. Namely the Rams and the 49ers. So that, to me, is a great takeaway. And the fact that they've got everyone's attention and just soaring up these power rankings, you go and you do that to the Vikings, now you are really established as a team to deal with in the NFL. Or you can give it back. You can go and lose the game or play lackluster and have people go, okay, maybe they're not all that. Well, you gotta build on it. You gotta double it up.
That's what Chase Edmonds, that quote that we played, he's exactly right. Last year they got off to the good start. They beat San Francisco. They come home. They beat Washington. And then you got a home game against Detroit, and everybody's thinking, wow, this should be a 3-0 football team, and they stink up the joint, and they actually lose their next two to even their record after they got dominated by Carolina. When a player recalls that so freely, that means that's being that's being driven into their heads, the guys that were on this team last year.
Yes.
On the point of physicality that you wrote about on ArizonaSports.com, this is a cut from Steve Keim back in March. So this is prior to even the NFL draft, when they added a very physical player in the first round in Zaven Collins. But about the offseason goals.
Yeah, two of our offseason goals, I think, that really stand out to me was becoming more physical as a football team and adding leadership to our locker room. And I think that those three guys all bring not only the physicality of the game, but the leadership and the intangibles you look for to, in many respects, I call it self-policing your locker room, which, you know, we can't go home with these guys at night. We can't tell them how much tape to watch. They have to do it on their own. They have to have the passion and the want to. And those three additions, certainly, in my opinion, have really raised the bar for us in that respect.
And that's Watt, Green, and Hudson, and they all played a role in that victory. Corey Peters, who came back for week one after not playing in the preseason, kind of a surprise signing in the offseason after he was coming off surgery. He nearly scored the first touchdown of the year, but he also kind of reflected on Cliff Kingsbury making it a point to say this is not a statement. This is a starting point.
Well, I mean, I think we had a very good training camp coming off camp. That's really what we expected, to go on the road and get a win, have a good performance. So, you know, I think it really, the test of this team is going to be the consistency that we're able to create. I think everybody knows what we're able to be at our best, you know, but, you know, we really have to put the consistency together and play a complete games and complete season.
Yeah, and again, if that was your starting point, it's a really good place to start and build off of.
Yeah, and if you, once again, if you can get that kind of pressure up front, because you would assume, as you said earlier in the program, that the Minnesota Vikings are looking at this and going, okay, we can't do what the Titans did. We have to make sure we double-team Chandler Jones. Well, okay, now you do that. Now this is starting to materialize as a win-win for this defense. So hopefully J.J. Watt, as you pointed out, on the other side can have a day, can kind of wreak that same kind of havoc that allows Vance Joseph the opportunity to drop seven guys in coverage, that allows Isaiah Simmons to fly around and to kind of cover up and buy some experience for these young guys that are starting on defense. And you couldn't draw it up any better in week one, I'll put it that way. I don't know what we're going to get from the Vikings. I was very confident in the Vikings last year early on, and I kept expressing confidence, and then they finally just kind of fell apart, yep. Right? I respect their head coach, maybe too much. Their quarterback is really, you can get a really a good game out of Kirk Cousins. You can get a garbage game out of him. I don't know what the Vikings possess or what kind of problems they're going to pose. I just think that the Cardinals have an opportunity. If they jump this team the way they jumped the Titans, this hype train is going to be hauling.
The similarities between these first two opponents in some regards is weird. You mentioned it. Respect
especially
for
offensively.
That, yeah, exactly. Your respect for the head coach. Mike Vrabel, a respected head coach. Mike Zimmer, a very respected head coach.
Name Mike.
The quarterbacks. I think Tannehill and Kirk Cousins are kind of in that same class. I think Tannehill's a little bit more consistent. They both have a great running back. Mm-hmm. Henry for Tennessee, Cook for the Vikings. They both have a pair of really good wide receivers, Brown and Jones for Tennessee, Thielen and Jefferson for Minnesota. They both have young, inexperienced offensive coordinators. Goodwin last year in his second year, Clint Kubiak's in his first year as an offensive coordinator this year. I mean, that's a lot of similarities between these two teams.
You're not
now, I haven't checked too much. I hope the left tackle for Minnesota is also coming off an injury.
It was something that I feared going into the season, and after watching them against Tennessee, I'm like, this is great. You handle this home game. You've got Jacksonville in week three. You're looking at their coach
might be gone by then.
It's very possible. You're looking at a nice HOV lane to a 3-0 record going into that first divisional game.
Just like last year.
Yeah.
Detroit, Jacksonville, those cat teams with aqua blue uniforms. Uh-huh. Similarities are crazy. You can text your thoughts on it to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, after the offseason that Aaron Rodgers had, week one, not a good look, and he's getting a lot of criticism for it. We'll share some of it with you next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
Dan Bickley and Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Well, I felt like our energy was a little bit low. It felt a little bit San Diego-ish from a couple years ago. We just kind of needed something to get going, and it was the same type of thing, long drives on their side and us not executing. So, we had, 10 plays-ish there. And, it's 17-0 when we're in a two-minute mode on our third drive in the first half. So very disjointed possession-wise. We've been in games like that before where we've only had a couple possessions. I think we had one against Minnesota maybe last year where it was limited possessions in the first half, but I think we scored on all of our possessions, so that one felt obviously a lot better than this did.
It's Aaron Rodgers, quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, coming off a terrible performance in week one against the Saints. 15 of 28, 133 yards, two picks. They mustered 3 points on the day. He didn't finish the game. Jordan Love finally got to throw passes in an NFL game that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Rodgers, that was his fourth lowest quarterback rating for a start in his career, 36.8. Coming off the offseason where he was dominant in generating headlines about himself and his future, had a big bombshell that he orchestrated on draft day about his future, the vagaries of what he wanted or what he was irking him with Green Bay, and then finally coming back before the start of training camp.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst first game offering you could have even imagined for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Yeah.
And I think the criticism is warranted.
Well, again, it's Aaron Rodgers. So, and this has been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL for quite some time now. He's entitled to have a bad game, but I think it's everything that preceded the game that is sort of piling on here to the way people are perceiving this. One of the funny elements out of this was Aaron Rodgers blamed his first interception on Sunday on getting hit on the groin area.
Yeah,
he called it a double nut shot.
Or in more Aaron Rodgers language, the discount double check.
That's right. So that can throw a guy off his mark. But in a larger degree, I think there's no doubt there's a lot of backlash waiting for Aaron Rodgers because of the way he took over NFL draft day. Because everybody in the game knows it.
Oh, yeah. That was, hey, Adam Schefter, here's a story for you.
Yeah, hey. Yeah.
Hours before the draft starts.
It was right when the preseason started, and he gave a 30-minute press conference where he pretty much just threw everybody in the organization under the bus and said everything that you heard in the offseason was true about how unhappy I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the criticism is coming from different sources. Here's Ryan Clark from ESPN.
I'm concerned because they understand how important this season is, right? When Aaron Rodgers holds out, when Aaron Rodgers negotiates a contract that can maybe get him out of Green Bay, when it's the last dance and all these references to the opportunity you have to capitalize on your Hall of Fame quarterback that only has one Super Bowl appearance, and you show up like this for game one, when everything should truly be in your favor. Mm. Hurricane Ida runs the New Orleans Saints out of their hometown. They're trying to figure out a way to get a home game that's played in Jacksonville. It's 50-50 Green Bay Packers, New Orleans Saints, and you're absolutely outplayed. The Saints are supposed to be the team with all the questions, but the Green Bay Packers are the team that showed up without any answers. Mm. And so when you think about this offseason, Rex, being the head coach, Matt LaFleur, not knowing if your quarterback's going to show up, not being able to have any type of chemistry, not playing these guys throughout the preseason, they look like a team that was unprepared. Yeah. They look like a team that was physically, mentally, and emotionally unprepared to play this game, and the Saints were ready to pounce on them.
Yeah, so Rodgers is going to get a lot of that criticism about being unprepared, along with the head coach, Matt LaFleur, and others. But that's not the only source of criticism. Former Packers tight end JerMichael Finley, who wore that uniform for 6 years, from 2008 to 2013. He was a guest of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, their morning show on ESPN Radio, and he did not hold back.
This is the National Football League. Each offseason, you got to work like it's the last season, and I just don't see a work ethic in Aaron Rodgers that I have in previous years. And actually, you can see it right through his helmet. The eyes and the face tells everything of the personality. And I just don't see it, that NFL hunger and just feel hungry to go win another championship. I just think it's cliche and talk that guys get up there and say, oh, I want to win a championship. Oh, it sounds good, but I want to see what you do on the field.
More from JerMichael Finley about Aaron Rodgers deflecting criticism.
He's a quarterback that doesn't never take blame for himself. He's that guy, if I throw the ball to the receiver, got to catch it wherever it's at. He's not a guy, if you go into the film room and he made a bad pass, he's not that guy who's going to raise his hand and say, oh, that's my bad. He's going to make sure the coaches know that that's all on you. I got the ball there. You got to catch the ball.
Okay, there's some heavy stuff there.
Very much so.
And I think that the idea that the work ethic isn't there, I don't know what JerMichael Finley knows about that, other than Aaron Rodgers said many times during the offseason how much he loved being in the offseason and how much he loved having some me time. He really went down that road frequently to kind of explain, I'm not going back to Green Bay.
Right. A lot of quarterbacks were posting Instagram videos and Twitter videos of workouts.
Yeah.
And he was posting social media about hanging out with Miles Teller in Hawaii.
Right, exactly. And learning how to play guitar, which is a great endeavor. But, you know, it's at some point in time, people are wondering, okay, what does football mean to you? And so now you've got a situation where this team had their doors blown off them by 35 points in week one. Wasn't even a home game for the Saints in the literal sense of the word. And if there's a lot of work to be done in Green Bay to get this thing right, does Aaron Rodgers want to put that work in? Does he care about the Packers enough to put that kind of effort in?
Well, I think we're going to find out. This was such a bad debut that we're going to find out pretty quick what the focus is from Aaron Rodgers. And Monday's show, tongue-in-cheek completely, just talked about Aaron Rodgers wanted to come back and play this year for the Packers just to derail any hopes they had of winning a championship on his way out of town, whether that's to another team or into retirement. All this being said, the real-time criticism is warranted. However, Monday night, when Green Bay takes on Detroit, would it shock you at all to see Aaron Rodgers throw for like 430 and five touchdowns?
No, not at all.
It wouldn't
and
at
this
all.
This is a very fortuitous opponent coming at perfect time for Green Bay.
Yes.
Is really what this is. This is a chance for that team to kind of get well fast and kind of close the book on this. But anytime you get a quarterback that good losing by that much, you have to say, what's going on here?
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
It was weird to see him actually on the bench at the end of the game. It was weird to see Jordan Love, the guy who's maybe been the most second talked about player in Green Bay over the last two seasons. It was weird to see him actually in a game.
No, I know. Listen, and it's to me, I think that this is really going to test what Aaron Rodgers deep down feels about this city and this team and this mm-hmm. franchise and how bad he wants to make this right this season. No.
Text Red C right now to 620-620. Listen for your name today at 735, 135, and 335. You could win a pair of tickets to the Arizona Cardinals home opener this Sunday. Plus, one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. Once again, that's Red C to 620-620. If you watched the Cardinals last Sunday, your eyeballs told you they played really well, but so do the grades. We'll get into some of that next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.